I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Zach to the Future. I'm your co-host, Dashiell Driscoll, joined today and every day and always by Mr. Miata himself, Mark Paul Gosselaar. Hello, Mark Paul.
Hello, Dashiell.
See, I changed it this time.
I know. I liked it. It was keeping me on my toes.
You like that version?
I like any version you give me. How about that?
Oh, thank you, Mark Paul. Yep. Thank you. Yep. We're back for part two of The Wicked Stepbrother. We might as well just do a quick little summary here, Mark Paul, if that works for you.
It works. Take it away.
Oh, my God. Great. Lisa's crash did $600 of damage to Belding's Miata. Lisa invites Eric to the MC Hammer Show with the ticket Zach used to bribe her. Zach and Slater plot to rig a student lottery to raise the money for repairs, which they need to do quickly since Belding came home early. Screech wins the lottery. Eric overhears and tries to blackmail them. Zach tells him how Lisa got those tickets. Eric confronts Lisa, who tearfully reveals the truth, causing them to split. For revenge, Eric has the auto shop class take apart the Miata. Jesse confronts Eric about Lisa's real feelings, then punches him in the face for calling her a chick and not giving their new family a fair shot. Just when the boys are about to be caught by Belding, surprise, Eric put the car back together himself. Eric's moving back to New York, but everybody shows up to convince him to stay. He says he's going to stick around Bayside for a while. The end. And we're in Act 1 of Part 2.
And just to set it up real quick, the Wicked Stepbrother is played phenomenally by Joshua Hoffman.
Yeah,
I still can't stand his face. He just has a face you want to punch. And thankfully, someone, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but someone in this episode does take a swipe at Eric.
A good old punch, yeah. I was asking the question last week, how is no one just wailing on this guy? And Jesse was there to answer it with a right cross.
So at the top of this episode, we get a flashback. And It seems that Zach is still at the crash site while his voice is over this flashback. We see Kelly in that flashback. were discussing this before we went on the air.
Yeah.
Where is Kelly?
That's the
in this
only time
episode?
You're gonna see Kelly.
Yeah, we see her say the ocean's on the left, and that's basically it.
Yeah, it seems like she gets fed up with the gang not giving Eric a chance, and she storms off and then just never storms back. She disappears. I'm not quite sure. I mean, maybe there was a scheduling reason, or I guess she was just fed up with everyone's antics. Didn't want to deal with it.
It seems weird. I mean, usually when you're signed on as a regular on a show, you're there at the production's disposal. You can't just take off for a week. Really interesting to find out what happened, because these episodes, this particular episode was shot in January of 1991, about 6 months before we did the beach episodes, even though they air after the beach episodes. It just seems weird because, and also we filmed part one week and we filmed part two another week. So where would Kelly go or Tiffany go between weeks? It doesn't make any sense, and I'm sure she doesn't remember, so we won't go down that rabbit hole.
Well, I don't want to spoil too much for you, Mark Paul, but later in series, some key characters are just going to start disappearing and reappearing without any rhyme or reason. So this is kind of like par for the course.
Yeah, I'm aware of that because that's how you and I actually initially met. You had wrote a spec script about the Tory days of it all, so.
Yes.
I am aware that
trying
at
to unravel
point,
that mystery.
Yeah, at some point it starts getting a little wacky, but I look forward to those days, and hopefully we're
at
still
some
around.
Point. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you mean us as a podcast or us as human beings or what you mean, but
both.
I agree. I hope that we're still around. Yeah, both. Yeah, it is like, I mean, we talk about rhyme or reason, and things get a little wacky. This was filmed half a year before you guys go to the beach, and yet airs out of sequence after. We were going through the production schedule a little bit.
Right. I mean, we filmed this right after pretty much Breaking Up Is Hard to Undo, The Aftermath, The Last Dance, and before Fake IDs, Operation Zach, Check Your Mate, Pipe Dreams. We filmed it before that.
Interesting. And, yeah, so all over the place, really.
Yeah, yeah, really all over the place. I remember this title because I've seen lots of memes about it and things on social, but No Hope With Dope was filmed April of 1991. So a few months after we filmed this.
Yeah, it's so I guess Kelly just disappearing down a hallway is just like we're living in an M.C. Escher painting or something. Like the stairs go up, down, and sideways. It's just kind of, it's all over the place here at Bayside. Get used to it, I guess. And we're in the never before seen Bayside Auto Shop here.
Question: is this the same night? Because I'm wearing the same turtleneck. So we said we'd meet at around 11, or no, be back at 11. The accident happens. So we're going to fix this car in the middle of the night. How do we get into this garage, first of all?
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have not begun to think about any of that. I was just more thinking about Bayside has an auto shop. They're taking apart cars at this school. I guess they are. Yeah, I guess they did break into school to fix a car. That is two crimes. Or three, I guess. They stole a car. Now they're breaking in. They're probably stealing the parts to fix it.
No, well, they're not stealing the parts to fix it because I don't know. It seems really low. They come up with this number. They assess the damage, and it comes out to $600+ for all that damage. And there's an oil line leak. I don't know. It just seems odd that a crash into a brick wall. Where's this brick wall, by the way? Because Screech was in front of her, and it seemed like that was a bush. If you try to piece it together, it won't make sense. So we won't.
Okay.
And we won't.
Okay. I was trying to. I was getting a headache. Okay. Thank
you. Don't
God.
Do it. But there's a lot of things that are just funny to me in the scene in the garage. The $600 for all that damage. I mean, that's a lot of damage, and $600 seems pretty low.
Nothing. You cannot. You scratch a door, you're going to do $600 of damage on a car.
Yeah. And it's like, we always come up with this number, and it's a huge number for these kids, but these are kids that have pretty, they're not wealthy, but they come from money.
They do. And also one of them in particular has a treasure trove of electronics at home, including a cell phone and personal computer. If you really were in a pinch, you could ditch some of those items and, scrounge up some cash.
So, Zach, of course, comes up with a big idea to solve this problem. And Screech says, well, listen, the last time I was naked in a jar full of jelly beans. How does that happen? How does someone fit in a jar full of jelly beans? Like this is, I think, the writers. I mean, you're a writer. So again,
yes,
writers sitting in a room going, probably eating jelly beans at the time. Yes.
Yeah, we're always eating. Yeah. Putting my fingers together like Mr. Burns. Yeah.
Yes. And God, wouldn't it be funny if Screech was in a jar full of jelly beans? And there you go. Boom. Is that how it works in the room?
Sometimes. Or sometimes we'll start with sometimes it can maybe someone beat a joke. Maybe it was initially a less funny thing. And then it grew into jar of jelly beans. One could only hope.
So could have been just, Screech in a jar, and then somebody tops up by going, he's naked. I'm trying to figure out what like the funniest component of that joke really is.
It's Screech naked? We can go to comedy school on it if you want, but I think the funniest part is just like, this is not the first time Screech has talked about the last time you had a great idea. I think the last time he was like naked on a bus. So it seems like they reference the, if memory serves, listeners, someone please correct me on Twitter tomorrow. But I think it's like, these like radio gags of things you'll never see, but just like saying out into the ether of, oh, this time. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess the nudity. Yeah, that would be the funniest part. I don't know. Maybe the jelly beans. I don't know what the funniest part is to me. You're right. How did he get in a jar? It's all good. See, Mark, it was a good joke, Mark Paul. There's so many layers to it. Much like a box of jelly beans. There's so many flavors in that joke. Hard to isolate just one. We're in the Max, where Lisa and Eric's romance will continue. I'm always just fascinated by the things people say in the show that wouldn't make sense now. A sentence like, take a cab for their next plans. Yeah. No one talks about that. No one takes cabs. No one says we need a cab, we need a taxi. That is just slowly but surely leaving the English language.
Yeah, that bumped me, though, while I was watching it, too. I have it in my notes. Lisa says to Eric, you know, the next time we go somewhere, because she's going to take him to the MC Hammer concert, so we should set this up for the audience.
Oh, yeah, sure, in case
Lisa actually is starting to really like Eric, and he comes into the Max, and she invites him to the concert. And she says, but next time, let's take a cab. And I thought that was interesting because growing up in Los Angeles, that's not really a thing I remember doing a lot of, taking a cab, right? I mean, that's more of a New York thing. I was driving at a very young age, so I didn't have the need to be escorted by, you know, a cab or someone with a car. What did you used to take when you had to go somewhere? Because I know the thing to take now is like my kids take Uber, they take Lyft to go to the mall. But what did you remember?
Getting a ride from parents would be a relatively common way to get around. But I like tried to be very independent as a kid and was like very into taking the bus places, especially living in the Valley. The bus runs right along Ventura Boulevard. I'd take it right down to Universal Studios to go see a movie or I now go to work on Saved by the Bell, oddly enough. I think that was like, or ride a bike. Those were the main modes. There was an app in the early days of iPhones that emerged that changed my life for a minute called Taxi Magic. It was a precursor to Uber and Lyft. And it was essentially that. It was like, because getting a cab in LA was such a freaking headache. You would like call a number and someone would show up like an hour later. It was a true pain in the ass. And there was an app that showed up that slightly made it a little less of a pain for a brief time in LA.
But for anyone who's not familiar with the geography of Los Angeles, and let's say these kids are in the Palisades, which they're in the Palisades. To the Forum is not a drive you want to take in a cab.
Oh, no. And that's also, that's going to be like $150 or something. Oh, it's going to be some astronomical amount. He will only accept cash. You're in a nightmare scenario taking a taxi from Malibu to Inglewood.
Her parents are doctors, so wouldn't you have
take a limo?
You would take a car. You would take a sedan.
A yeah,
you know, yeah. Yeah, or a limo. Yeah, I mean, I remember riding in a limo at this time. It was a really big thing. But yeah, if you're going on a date and you're going to the Forum, and I think she could splurge and go for the limo. Also, why doesn't Zach just ask Lisa for the money? And then he will somehow pay her back later. Like, they just need the cash. Like, what can we do to get cash now?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you go further down the road and be like, let's traffic one of our friends. Let's sell Ollie to someone. let's get rid of these people.
Hey, I have an even better idea. Why don't I sell Lisa to give out kisses?
Yes.
Oh, wait, never mind.
We already did that. That was already a quick, we already dabbled in human trafficking. Yeah, that's right.
So instead, I come up with a lottery to pay for the damages. I need $600. Yeah. And this is a get rich quick scheme by Zach Morris. Anytime somebody says that, you should run.
Right. It's always, they're going to be the ones getting rich quick, not you. I mentioned last week, this was like my first Zach Morris's trash dip in the pool. And I think the fun of that series that I was having was when the stories would hit these kind of inflection points where it's like, this is insane. Zach is waving around dollar bills in the hallway, rigging a lot, and it happens on a dime. It's just like the moves are so lightning fast. I think it's absurd in a really fun way.
But it's interesting. I don't know if you noticed the way that the boys look at cash and hold the cash. Mm-hmm. It's like things that they can't believe that they're holding a $10 bill. And again, it goes against the fact that this is an affluent neighborhood and which we've sort of hit in the reboot of the show, the reimagining, is that these kids were privileged, but yet they hold cash as if it's like, well, you know, king, but it doesn't make any sense. But help me understand this lottery. So
please, I'd love to help you understand.
Help me, because we're going to get into it in the classroom. But so they're buying tickets. It's already been rigged that Screech is going to win. So all the cash is obviously going to go to Screech. But what is Mr. Sachs, the algebra teacher, what is his component in this whole thing?
He's there to, Zach's pulling a magic trick on his fellow students. Mr. Sachs is there to have the appearance of keeping things honest, because he just pulls a question at random and there's no way we could know what the answer would be. Even though it is a little confusing that the answer must be on one of these tickets. I mean, that part makes no sense. But yeah, then Screech does a little switcheroo with the box. So presumably all the questions are the same in the box after that point. But it is a little odd that like the answer to one of his random questions must be on these tickets. That doesn't make sense.
And the question is a math problem?
We're
like
supposed
stump
to live
the teacher,
in a world,
but it's a math problem. So whatever the math problem, the answer to the equation, these set of numbers is basically your ticket. And so whoever has that answer,
the last digits of your ticket. Yes, in a world where every ticket has a lengthy number, but it is a little confusing. Like, how would they know that the answer must be one? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. I don't know. It's not I think we watch it and it's like, oh, this is what a smooth plan, but it's wildly intricate. Even just the concept of rigging a lottery, that's like advanced. That is, you have to be deep in the criminal underworld to understand like there's money to be made in convincing people this is fair, but really I hold all the keys.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we move into the classroom, two things I did point out was Curly Conan. I thought that was cute.
Yes.
That Jesse on the tapes. And the whole reason we're doing this is because we're being blackmailed by Eric, Jesse's wicked stepbrother.
Yeah.
And he has tapes. One of me being at the Dodger game when I should have been at school. And the other of Slater. We assume...
Heavy petting. That's what I'm going to go with. Yeah.
Okay. With Jesse.
Saturday morning.
With Jesse. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that could embarrass him and her, mostly her. So, but the other thing I wanted to point out is that I do a lot of hand acting, and I'll point those out. I at the end of this scene, I'm so frustrated. I put my hand to my head. And it's just such an awkward thing to do. I'll do it a few more times. It's so awkward. And I'll point them out.
Please do.
But I hate when I do that. I hate when I hand act. And I do a lot of it. I didn't know what to do with my hand.
I know one you do at the end that I was like, I gotta grill him on this one. You do one very specific motion at the end where I was like, stood out to you.
With Lisa? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
What it's like, I was like, that is like such a peculiar. See, now I'm into the B sides. I'm into the deep cuts. Like now I'm looking at what you're looking at. Yeah. Before we get out of this truly deranged hallway lottery scheme, where by the way we talked about this doesn't make sense. The amount of students that rush over to buy tickets is like 10 kids. They would each have to buy like $50 of tickets for them to suddenly be near their quote. Like that doesn't make sense either. But I just want to give a shout out to Ollie, who really shines in this episode. He is so funny with his little lines and his raspy voice. Just great. Great, great little scene stealer here. We also have Bo Jackson mentioned for the listeners. Bo Jackson is the only professional athlete in history to be named an all-star in both baseball and football. He also sings the blues in The World is Saved by the Bell. Also, give Ollie some love. Let's give a shout out to our friend Herbert. Or is it Hubert? I have Herbert in my notes.
I thought it was Hubert, H-U-B-E-R-T, but...
I think it is Hubert. I think I just made a little typo, or all these nerd names look the same to me. But I thought of him for the Screech beret scene, because he kind of rushes over with the crowd. He's like trying to buy his ticket and he gets in there, but he seems like he's the first to show up on the scene and the last to leave in these people swarm Zach scenes. Just a little consistency in his character acting. Oh, also here, Mark Paul. Farfanugan. I didn't know the origin of that. I didn't know it was from a Volkswagen campaign.
Yeah, it was before your time. I remember it.
Before my time, yeah. 1990 ad campaign for Volkswagen means driving enjoyment. I knew that word. I thought it was a real German word. I didn't know until I Googled it. Didn't know that was just made up by VW to sell cars.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't know it was made up either. I guess I never Googled it, but I didn't know that those words are a made up phrase.
It's like a compound. It's two words together. It means driving enjoyment.
And now you know.
Little VW history. That takes us. By the way, I loved you and Slater. That was really funny. You saying words together at the same time as like you're inventing them. Really, really good stuff.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And that brings us to Act Two. For an episode, like, I feel like this two-part of the structure, am I alone in this? Where it felt, the acts felt odd in this to me. Do you know what I'm talking about? Or was that just my own invention?
No. I mean, I don't write my notes like you do. I know that you know when act breaks are and stuff like that. I just kind of see it all as one.
You just wing it.
I just see it as one big thing, I guess.
It's
one
jazz.
Yeah. But why does it feel odd to you? Does it feel the acts are not equal?
Pacing,
or
I think.
Pacing?
Yeah, it's a pacing and rhythm thing. It's like some scenes are too... You know what it is? I know it now that I said it. Some scenes are too short. Some scenes are too long. Lisa's scene in the Max, very short. Zack Slater and Screech holding court in the hallway, very long. It's like a... Mm-hmm. It's a pacing thing. That's mm-hmm. what it is. I figured it out, listener and Mark Paul. We're in the math class. Again, this, yeah, like we touched on it. This scheme is very complex, and it seems to have united the school. Everyone here wants to win $600.
We've united the entire school, all 40 students.
Yeah, that's right. They're all there. They love gambling. Every last one of them can't get enough.
But it's so weird. No Jesse. No Lisa.
No.
No Kelly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kelly is, you know, in mourning that her friends have turned evil. But yeah, I guess that is
Lisa.
A little confusing,
sorry.
Huh?
My bad.
Oh, no, she's there.
She's there.
Hiding behind Hubert.
It's interesting, though, right? That Lisa is in this scene because wouldn't she... I mean, she's acting like she's in on the scheme.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Mm-hmm. No, she would know about... She would know... This is... She has all the information.
How?
Right?
No. Why did we tell her?
What information doesn't she... Wait. So she bought a ticket for her own repairs? Maybe she's just hyping people up. Maybe she's like a good snake oil salesman needs someone in the crowd to be like, well, he sounds pretty smart.
I don't know. Because, you know, Eric's in this scene as well, and he's going kind of like,
wait a minute.
What's going on
wait
here?
Wait a minute. I didn't see Eric. That makes no sense. He just knows something's fishy.
Yes, he knows something's fishy, but...
He knows something's fishy.
The frame that I froze here that we're looking at right now, Eric has that look on his face like, wait, what's going on here? And Lisa is with the rest of the class, you know, hyping it up. She's enjoying what's going on here. So she must understand either what we're doing or bought a ticket.
I would have to imagine she knows she was there when the car crashed. So I would have to imagine she understands what's going on to an extent.
Yeah.
I don't think she's there because she bought a ticket. I don't think she's that. Lisa's shown herself to be hip to Zach's schemes. Like, she knows he's shady. So I don't think she's entering any Zach Morris lottery anytime soon. Mr. Sachs is back. He is prideful, like every Bayside teacher and adult will meet on this show. And he truly believes everyone is there because they love his math so much. As soon as that alarm went off, Mark Paul, I have in my notes, everyone should have known this is a scam. That should have been truly the red flag, the alarm, if you will. But no, they're blinded by $600. And we get the little sequence of, you know, everyone hanging on his every number. And this will prove your point. This scheme does not make sense. Like, how different could the numbers be on these tickets? Aren't they sequential? Isn't that how tickets work? Like, each one is off by one digit, right? The numbers aren't random on the tickets. I'm pretty sure that's how tickets work. Like, each one goes up a number.
No, I think we work backwards, right? You have a number on a ticket, which is Screech's ticket.
So, oh no, I know how you'd rig it. I just mean, like, if I'm buying a ticket to this lottery, like, how am I supposed to believe, like, wait a minute, you're telling me that of all the questions in that box, every single one of them ends in some combination of these numbers, give or take one digit. Hmm. Or give or take, I guess, 600 digits.
I don't know. You've lost.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, this is a tricky one. This is a tricky one. But, you know, let's give him a pass. Let's not think about it too much, like Kelly walking down the halls. And we're in the Bayside locker room here now that Screech has won. And you feel bad for him because he's never won anything. And he just wants this to be his one victory in life.
I mean, you just want to smack him is what you want to do. And Slater is pretty close to smacking him. It basically stands up, says, give me the money or I'm going to flush you home. Does not get the response from the audience you would expect. They did not seem to like that. And it was a negative reaction.
Yeah, it's negative because you just found out the saddest thing in the world that he's like, he was there for every stage of planning this sham lottery, and he just wants to feel like a winner for one brief moment in time. And Slater's ready to put him in a toilet.
Note to anyone who is you know, just scammed a fake lottery, check the stalls in a bathroom before you have this conversation. Because surprise, Eric has been in the shitter the entire time. I have in my notes, I never heard it flush. Never heard anything back there. I assume we were sitting there for a few minutes.
Hey, I'm from New York over here. We don't flush. How's my accent? I haven't worked on it at all.
Also, I'm sure that if someone was doing a number two in these stalls, we probably would have heard something, smelled something.
Something.
Nope. He comes out.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. Maybe Eric is so good at blackmail, he heard the footsteps approaching the bathroom door.
Pinched it off.
Quickly flushed and lifted his legs. Yeah, he was just like, he's like, I need to be ready at all times being in a bath. He probably lives in bathroom stalls because that's a great place to get blackmail information. He's such a veteran blackmailer. That's probably what happened.
Sure.
It's best I got.
I'll buy it.
It's the best I can do.
Why not?
Why not? Part two of this episode. Why not? No one ever checks the stalls. Like at this school, you guys have been burned so many times. I think in Aloha Slater, it was Mario on a stall. If memory serves, all these episodes are blending together in my tiny brain. I would think that would be protocol now at Bayside. Like, guys, come on. We're doing too many schemes and scams. And they let the news slip, Zach does, and Slater corroborates. Lisa got bribed into the date. Even though she did have a good time, you know, she wasn't there for the right reasons. It's a 10 things I hate about you, you know? Sure, they fell in love, but it started under a faulty premise.
Which brings us to the max, and then we enter the typical TV trope. He comes in, asks questions, and if Lisa had just said, and you do this very quickly, you tell the truth, but quickly, he goes, did Zach give you the tickets to take me out? Yes, she says, but you don't understand. Yeah, that's why he's asking these questions. So quickly say yes, but I really enjoyed my time with you and I didn't think I would, but now I do and I really like you. I'm sorry. He would accept that answer, most likely, and we wouldn't have this moment where she goes, yes, but you don't understand. And he's like, you're right, and he walks off. And now, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, TV is mostly, we talked about this, listener, TV is mostly just characters withholding information from each other until a later point in time. Secrets out. yeah, I mean, that's what it is,
spoil
folks.
It for yeah, sorry. Everyone, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's only really five movies. Every movie you like is like, it's like Taco Bell. There's only five things on the menu. It's just all mixing together in different ways. But yeah, you know, I have here in my notes, like, yeah, Lisa's, there's a difference between the truth and the whole truth. Like when you're in court, they're like, do you swear to tell the whole truth? And like Lisa is not divulging the whole truth here, even when he's confronting her. It's frustrating. She also should have said, yes, I was bribed to go on a date, but I had nothing to do with setting you up to crash a car. Like that's what she should have. You know, that's the whole truth, is like she didn't know that there was a blackmail scheme involved, or a reverse blackmail, excuse me. Counter blackmail. But we get this emotional moment from Lark here, and it's sad. This episode has a few like kind of emotional moments, but I really feel for Lisa. It's like she cannot. We had Amy Jo on one of the early podcast episodes for the Lisa card, one of the writers on the Reimagining, and she's really a Lisa Turtle advocate. And you know, it's like her romance life at Bayside sucks, and this chapter is no exception.
Yeah, she does some heavy lifting in the scene and does a really good job. That's not an easy thing to do where, you know, she had a moment. I don't know if you notice this, but Eric walks out, her back is turned to the camera. And within that moment, she has to turn around with a lot of emotion, sit down, which is not easy, and sit in that very confined space and you know, show this on screen. It's always difficult for an actor. She does an amazing job, though. And I'm not wearing a hat this episode, but if I was wearing a hat, I would take it off. Not really, but my hat
not really,
goes
no.
off to Lark.
Mess up the headphones. And we are in the auto shop for Eric's revenge, which.
He's a real dick.
If you go back,
he's
and
a dick.
He's a real
piece
real
of
dickhead.
Shit. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just like swinging low, man. I mean, he just he doesn't give a zero. You know what? I'm trying to limit the amount of swear words we use on our podcast in case children are listening, because you know, Saved by the Bell was made for nope, it wasn't made for children. Don't want to say that. Nope.
Young adults.
No, you can't say young adults. It was made for everyone, Dashiell. Everyone was. Didn't you get called out on this on Twitter one time?
I did. People are. I appreciate anyone who wants to listen to this thing. Thank you. And yeah, some people have notes. So one of the notes was.
No. No, people have no opinions. People do have notes. No one has an opinion in this.
No, people have notes these days. Someone, another. Yeah, I mean, you know. Look, we're all doing our best, and if you write in with notes, I will do my best to take them into consideration. Mixed results. I don't know. I'm, you know, for a writer, I only have so many words, so I'm sorry if some of them are curse words. If you do watch that original Zach Morris's Trash episode, the thing I pointed out there that sticks with me here too is like they left the car in the only place where it was in danger of being like dismantled. Like they left it in a room where people take apart cars. That makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a sticky one. Like you could have hid it anywhere else besides a room filled with tools to, I mean, I guess to fix it is the idea, but like, it seems like there's an active class there that we never see again, of course. Only time.
Yeah. And you would think that Slater has some of those tools in his own garage.
Oh, yeah, he fixed a car himself. He fixed his own car.
Right.
It took him like 10 minutes.
Do that. Why didn't we just bring it to Slater's? His dad wouldn't mind. His dad's off, you know, being an army guy on an army base. He's never home.
He's doing like special ops somewhere around the world, overthrowing a dictator, installing a new one.
Sounds amazing. But no, we leave it in the school garage. And the Mr. Sonsky.
I have him here.
Rodney Dangerfield thing going on, which I always love.
Wait a minute. Monty Hoffman. That's what the Hoffman confusion was earlier. Correct. Monty Hoffman, no relation to that.
Joshua Hoffman, who plays Eric. Yeah. Correct.
Oh my God. The simulation is folding in on itself. Mr. Sonsky, who will later be Coach Sonsky, played by Monty Hoffman. He also appeared on California Dreams, so a little Peter Engelverse connection, as well as Fresh Prince, and he played Santa in an episode of Married with Children, I would imagine took place during Christmas. His first role was a bouncer in Howard the Duck, and he'll be back for one more episode as a coach.
And I don't know the conditions of his death, but he sadly passed away in 2013 at the age of 60.
Yes. Yes, he did. And a little Who's on First, by the way. The classic Screech and Sonsky. Dustin did so good at these, like, it's almost like vaudevillian kind of back and forth moments. He does them with Belding too. They're really great. Classic comedy. What, Mark Paul, what room are they in? Like, I know that they have to build the auto shop, you think? Because it's not your usual classroom.
The classroom remained a classroom at all times. We just switched around certain things within the room. If we had to build a set like this, it would just be to the stage right of the classroom. So that's what this probably is. Instead of taking the back wall, which has the garage opening, and changing that out, I think they just built a whole nother set to the right. Right. Cause there is a blackboard on the, on one of the walls. I can't tell what's on the other wall. But it's just the back wall is a little bit different with this door opening here. So I don't know. No, of course not. Because we see Mr. Sachs' classroom. That remains the same. Yeah. This had to be a swing set.
Yeah.
So we built this off to the right. There's your answer. Went the long way around it. There we go.
No, it's good to look. We're solving cases every day here on Zach to the Future.
And then later on in the scene, Zach and Slater walk into a completely dismantled Miata.
It looks like a hurricane did go through it. It's like, so the steering wheel is on the ceiling. I think that's so fun. Listener, there's that word. It's like, what's going on in auto shop class? How do they even learn anything? It's just like, let's just rip this freaking car apart.
They did it pretty quickly too.
Yeah. I mean, it literally looks like a bunch of like animals ripped that thing apart. It's really, I don't think anyone's learning anything in that class. Also, Dustin, Mark Paul, you're an actor. Did they really put him in all those tires? I was looking at that shot. It's like, it looks like that's the only way to shoot that.
Yeah.
Is have Dustin stand there and you top him up to the head with tires.
Yeah. I'm sure they did. Why?
Yeah.
But why not?
Because it's super uncomfortable. I mean, that feels like it would be a hard thing, especially if you're there for multiple takes and setups. I mean, Dustin would always do the physical stuff, but like this one stood out to me as being like a form of torture almost. Like if you put me in tires for an hour, I would tell you anything you wanted to know.
One thing I do remember about Dustin is that he was very slender and very slim. So his shoulders would have easily fit in the tires here. You got to understand he's also 14. He's not thinking like you and I, which would be like, oh, that's going to be uncomfortable. He's just like, oh, this is going to be, it looks fun. It's for a gag. Okay. I'm going to get a laugh.
Yeah.
It's all about the laughs.
So true. Not anymore, folks. It's all about the comfort.
it's all about the comfort. But this is where I was talking about the hand acting as well. Times two, I put my hand to my forehead to really drive the point across that I'm frustrated and I don't know what to do. But lazy acting,
Screech,
in my opinion.
Had a hand. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That you were frustrated that your own friend helped take apart the Miata.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, you're doing your best. You had a lot to process these weeks. I mean, the love of your life walked down a hallway and disappeared forever. That's enough to make a man's hands crazy. We're in Act 3 for Jesse and Eric's room. I guess it's Eric's room now. I mean, he really made himself at home quickly.
Didn't take him long.
He installed many things with like drills and nails. Like he has a collection of baseball bats and his, what do you call that thing? The boxing bag?
The speed bag.
Is there a name for it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hanging from the ceiling. Like he had to install, like he must have had maybe a contractor show up and like do all this. Did he go to the poster store at the promenade? Like, what did he do?
How many baseball gloves does he have? How many sports equipment items does he have? We really need to drive across the point that he's into sports. So there's hockey sticks and boxing gloves and basketballs. And I mean, he's in this scene. I saw three baseball gloves that he plays with two of them. It really bothered me that he's wearing gloves to do a speed bag. You don't, those gloves are for a heavy bag. You use that just to protect your knuckles so you don't scrape them or whatever. There's no padding in them, but you know, sometimes with heavy bag work, you're just working on technique and speed and stuff like that. But the speed bag, generally, I mean, if your hands are wrapped, I guess, but it just looks weird wearing those gloves to do the speed bag. I don't know. Little things like that bum me out.
Well, I hope hope you'll rebound from that. To use a sports term, something Eric would have loved. He also loves Rocky IV so much. Like I was just like this, the collection of set decoration to be like he moved in and made himself at home is so. Eric seems like a real mix here.
Yeah, and he's got like a Motley Crue poster. Is that a Motorhead poster on the wall? Yeah,
I think it is. But there's also a poster, if I have it right, against nuclear testing. Like there's like a thing about like it's like an anti-nuke message.
But that's
so that maybe might, him and
but that might be
Jesse's still.
Yeah, that he hasn't taken down
is
yet.
Is it? Oh, okay. Maybe he's like he left some things up. But he really everything else. I was like wondering if maybe they have like some things in common. Because I don't remember that from Jesse's room, but maybe it's her framed denim on the door took all my focus.
And then Jesse decides to take a swipe at her brother here. Did anything stand out to you about that?
Yeah.
Tell me.
I don't know if you're talking about my notes, but what I have in my notes is after he says just a chick and she clocks him, you can hear Elizabeth yell, "Come on, you'll want more." That stood out to me. That's terrifying. If I just got hit in that face and someone is yelling, asking if I, that must have been, I would love to know if that was in the script because that feels just like a thing you yell in the moment. What stood out to you?
It might have been in the moment because the camera wasn't actually on her.
Right. I had that too. Yeah. It's like it. Yeah. Otherwise, there would have been coverage of the line if it was supposed to be covered.
So nowadays, doing a punch like this, we would have a stunt coordinator on the set. There would be a big discussion about how we're going to do this and whether or not you know, the actor Joshua, who plays Eric, can take it, and we have to train Elizabeth how to throw this punch. I'm not so sure that we had any of that. It might have just been, you know, Mario showing Elizabeth how to throw a punch and, you know, her going for it. But what stood out to me was Elizabeth throws a punch, and what hand is that? Her right. And so it would be a right cross to Eric. Now, from this angle that I freezed it on, where would that right cross connect?
Wait a minute. Ow. I feel like for all the MC Escher talk now, my brain's getting twisted.
I'm setting you up.
Wait a minute. It looks right to me. Am I just unfamiliar? No,
everything's
like it should have
right
gone
right
on the cheek.
Yes, it should have gone on the cheek. But which cheek?
Oh.
Which one?
Oh,
tell me.
Shit.
Looking at this freeze frame angle.
It would be
one?
His left cheek.
Correct.
It would be his left.
Now I'm going to
play
it.
But in all the shots after, okay, he holds his right side.
He holds his right side. And then, look, he's still holding his right side. He got hit in the left cheek.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Oh, God, listener. And then it's the makeups on that side every shot after.
Yes.
How the hell did you see that, Mark Paul? What's
going
on?
What do you mean? What, you don't need to see it to understand. Like, have you ever thrown a punch before? I mean, if I throw
it's violence. It happens so fast. No, look, I'm just saying it like it. the chaos of it happens so quickly.
Right.
My eye, it's like, again, it's magic tricks. These are just illusions. So it all like, I know she didn't really punch the guy in the face, but it moved so fast. I didn't have time to think about it, but that's,
listen,
you know, someone else pointed out a pretty major blunder last week, which was the announcer at the Dodgers game says Daryl Strawberry, like they fudged the order where it was like, because the Dodgers are at home, Daryl Strawberry wouldn't be batting at the bottom of the inning. That's what, like they should have realized that because it was a Dodgers home game, the Dodgers would be in the bottom of the inning.
Right,
not
Daryl
Strawberry.
Team. Correct.
Yeah, but they messed that up last week. It was like a tiny announcer thing. The announcer's like, Daryl Strawberry in the bottom, wouldn't happen.
Oh, maybe the bottom of the order?
This one's...
The bottom of the order?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Oh, shit.
I mean, that could have been an argument that I would have made, is maybe Daryl Strawberry batting in the bottom of the order. I don't know. I didn't listen.
I think
to the
they mentioned the inning, but it's fine. This feels way more aggressively a whoopsie daisy, kind of on everyone. Like that doesn't make any sense
because there's over 200 people on a production, and you know we had time to rehearse this. This is a big thing. This is a big rehearsal.
Yeah,
and he grabs his right cheek after she hits him from the left. I mean, she hit his left cheek. He should be grabbing his left cheek.
Yeah, the amount of attention to detail in production blows my mind when I'm lucky enough to be around it. And people talk about every, literally the angles. What are we seeing? What is you know, that is really funny that it is just wrong. Categorically wrong.
Welcome to Saved by the Bell. I'm your co-host, Mark Paul Gosselaar, joined by none other than Dashiell Driscoll.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That is just nutso to me. But hey, look, everybody makes mistakes, folks. That's what life's all about, I guess. And Jesse's little emotional moment is not, I mean, it's in the same conversation as Lark's. Like, they both have these, like, kind of cathartic, emotion-heavy moments. Like, Jesse's right. Like, you should have given this family a chance. Ever since you've gotten here, you blackmailed everyone. I'm living in the backyard. And, you know, she was right to punch him. He is being a total dickhead. To use a word you couldn't say on Saturday morning TV. And we're in the max. The boys got just a smidge of oil on their faces here trying to fix the car.
Nothing says working on a car like oil on the face. We're not the first production to do that, by the way. That is just another TV trope.
No, but you know what else is like, you know what those jumpsuits, you don't need to wear those to the max.
No, you don't need to wear those to the max. And you know what else you might want to do just to drive home the fact that we've been working with car parts is dirty up all of the boys' hands, not just mine. My hands are dirty, but I don't see Screech's hands dirty and I don't see Mario's hands dirty.
I'm shaking my head, listener. How do you see that?
But our face is dirty.
How do you see that? Do you think you dove it? You were like, hands would be dirty. I know that. I'm going to dirty my hands.
I don't know.
And then Mario was like, sure, dude.
I don't know. I mean,
you think that's how it went down?
I think it's also one of those things like, I think they did it to me first. And then I'm like, well, how am I going to get this off? They're like, well, you got to wash your hands like 100 times. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then Mario's like, well, before you do that, could I get away with just washing my hands 50 times? No. All right, you know what? I don't want to do it. And then Dustin was standing behind him and said, yeah, I don't want to do it either. So then I just walk out there with dirty hands. I mean, it comes honestly, it could have come down to that. Like, you know, that's the makeup or wardrobe department's job to sort of deal with the continuity of it all. So it must have been something that Mario and Dustin decided against. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to dirty up my hands and take the time to take it all off at the end. Because mine are substantially dirty. Mine look like I've been working on a car.
Yeah,
and later on in the scene, I'm holding a menu or something, and you'll see it as well.
If I'm Max, I got to start making some rules about dress code here. Like, you guys cannot bring in your oil-soaked rags of clothing to my place of business.
Yeah.
Touching all my menus.
And usually when you wear these kind of coveralls, it's to protect your clothes underneath from getting... anything on them, but they're also meant to, so you don't I mean, you have it on the outside. I assume that's wet. Mario's sitting in that chair. That chair is going to get messed up from his, oil. Why are we doing this, Dashiell? We're just picking the show apart. Let's just roll with it.
I don't know.
Look amazing in those things, and we need to tell the audience that we've been working on a car, and this is the best way to do it. So there.
This is how you do it, okay? You got to make the TV show. You got to hold the football if they're on the football team. It's just, we could be here all day on that, folks. And we won't. We'll move right along. Yeah. And yeah, everyone acknowledges they fudged up. Whoops, we made mistakes. That's another thing you do on TV. You learn from your mistakes. And they're going to tell Belding the truth, and then we smash cut to them lying more. Really good.
And it's also, because watching this over right now, this is the next day. We didn't go and tell them after the max. We actually waited the next day because these are different clothes that were, this is different from the clothes that were on under our coveralls.
Yeah. Yeah, they slept on it. They had a whole night to reconsider telling the truth. Realized they better lie instead. A little deus ex machina here, just walking into auto shop and everything is magically fixed. Belding can listen to his CDs. Thank God. Because of Eric. Because apparently Eric is like a god with cars. He was able to do unworldly things to this Miata and, overnight.
He's from New York. New Yorkers are good with their hands.
What we do there. Over here.
That's what they do over here. They wear coveralls and flip the collar up. Because nothing says I'm from New York like a flipped up collar. Did you notice that as well?
I didn't see it until right now, but that is egregious. That is an egregious costume decision.
Oh, Lord.
Like a leather jacket. He might as well be wearing a leather jacket over the coveralls at that point. It's like a very Fonzie. What you're kind of...
Fonzie would do that.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. Yeah, well, he's going back to New York, I guess. Not before giving them their tapes. Again, he is just like... blackmailing them with media we just don't use anymore. A little retro blackmail here. And suddenly he gives a shit about Jesse. Take care of my sister. My sister. He like they're the closest of siblings now. Also, Zach and Slater are both like, hell yeah, he's gone. We got our tapes. Like, they really don't give a shit about this guy.
No, we really don't.
They really don't give a shit.
Which is so
that.
Funny.
They're just like...
That reaction is what I had as well, but also going into this next scene in Jesse's room, he's taking down the posters, he's moving back to New York. How quickly we all come, we rebound again, using that word, but we just all decide that no, we want him to stay.
For no reason. No. What happened? No. Like what? All he did was. I mean, he did really save your guys' ass, but only because he did the damage in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
He just undid a terrible thing he did.
And so this kid, I assume he's the same age as Jesse or possibly younger, in a different grade. No, he would have to be in the same grade, right? I mean, he would have to be the same age. He's in the same classes as us and Screech. So let's just say he's in the same thing. But anyway, so he's 16, 17 maybe at the most, but he's moving back to New York. He's going to go live with his aunt. He can make these decisions, even though his stepmom and his father, I presume, moved out from New York. I don't know. It's so weird what Jesse's mom did. She got married on the East Coast, came back here. Eric, the stepbrother, decides to move back here, but now he's going back to New York and he can make those decisions and no one seems to care.
Yeah, that's in my notes as well. It's like when I was 16, I certainly didn't have the agency to move across the country back and forth and to be like, you know what, this week I'm living in New York. But Eric can do that, I guess. Maybe he has some real dirt on his dad. That's probably what it is. Eric's probably blackmailing the rest of his family. He had no problem pulling this shit with Jesse. This stuff, excuse me. I'll try to curse less for the kids. Here we go, though. Eric listens to the Misfits and Motley Crue. Okay. Here we go with everyone coming in. This is some real Saved by the Bell stuff of like, we all showed up in your bedroom in the last 90 seconds to make it all okay.
Minus Kelly.
Minus Kelly. Kelly is still heartbroken that her friends would be so mean to this guy that she is not speaking to anyone. Yeah, where is Kelly? I guess we'll never know. That makeup, too, is really an interest. Like, it doesn't look like a black eye. It looks almost, it like matches Eric's shirt. There's, okay. That's what I was talking about with your hand acting right there. You're making a face. It's when Lisa says, I would have never gone out with you. Mark Paul, please walk us through your choices here.
poor choices. I don't know what that's about. I have in my notes, I'm just mugging in the background. You generally don't want to do that. I'm going to give you a little acting note here, Dashiell, because I know you're asking for
please.
It.
Every day.
If you're in the background, there's a fine line where you have to do something, but you don't want to do too much where your attention is brought to you instead of what's happening in the foreground. So you should have never noticed me. You should have kept your eye on Lisa playing Lark this entire time because she's coming up with this, you know, she's exposing herself. But yet me being me, I took the attention and brought it on myself and I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm reacting to. It makes no sense. I guess I'm proud of myself for the fact that she never would have gone out with him if it wasn't for me. I think that's what I'm thinking there by that reaction.
That's what I have too, but it's such a, she's really being sensitive or like, she's really being like yeah. honest and sincere and like vulnerable. And for you to be like, what, like, come, I'm the reason for this. Me and my skin. It's like, it's a very funny choice.
Yeah.
But you clear for him. Slater's much quicker. He's like, I'm getting the hell out of this touching moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's in another universe. Lark and Eric could have, Lisa and Eric could have been an item or something. I don't know. He says he's sticking around Bayside.
He's sticking around Bayside, yeah, but he's not. They're not going to be together. Like, where did he go?
Oh, I forgot. I forgot that you're new to this series, Mark Paul. We'll never see him again. Not what? One more again, ever.
Is he mentioned ever?
No, never. Jesse's brother never mentioned. Never. Jesse's. I guess it would be a little weird if Eric's at Jesse's dad's wedding. But yeah, no, it's. This was, again, not to make everything about my dumb web series from many years ago now. This was a thing I latched onto very quickly, my fascination with this thing Saved by the Bell loved to do, which was introduce someone, say in clear language, hey, you're our new friend. You're going to be around. And then we never see him again. Happens all the time. It'll only happen more from this point. Like, we saw it with Denise Richards at the beach. She was very clearly like, I'm going to Bayside. I'll see you guys later. Nope. Now Eric's gone forever too. It's almost like the kiss of death in a scary movie. Like when someone says, I'll be right back, that thing. It's like if someone at Bayside is like, we're friends now. It's like, nope. you're going away forever.
You're not friends forever.
No, not friends. There can only be one friends forever group. We also get our third New York crime joke in two episodes. Sure, why not? But yeah, that's the story of The Wicked Stepbrother, Mark Paul, parts one and two.
We got through it.
We did it. Our first two-parter won't be our last. There'll also be a wedding in Palm Springs and Christmas at the mall before this season's done. And that brings us to homework for next week. Next week's episode is the date auction.
Sounds any unethical. Guesses?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not in the ways that you think, actually. I mean, I guess really? It kind of is. Date auctions are bad news anyways. Like, that's not a good thing.
No.
Auctioning people, historically, not good, folks. Yeah. Well, we'll see you next week for that one. Thank you. Thank
such
you,
such a great
listeners.
Way to end the show.
Such a positive note. Yep. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, Mark Paul, for being here. And we'll see you next week. Zach to the Future is a production of Cadence 13. It's executive produced by Mark Paul Gosler, myself, and Chris Corcoran. Production and direction led by Terrence Malangone. Editing and mastering by Andy Jaskowitz. Engineering and production coordination by Sean Cherry. Artwork by Kurt Courtney with illustrations by Jeff McCarthy. Marketing is led by Josephina Francis with PR by Hillary Shoup. Thanks to the whole team at Cadence 13 and to you for listening.